you're ever lost in the North Woods. Damn it. Hold on.
From the top.
If you're ever lost in the woods, look for the North
Star.
Its twinkling will comfort you.
As you die.
Crypto is built on unbreakable principles. It's basically like the laws of physics, which is unlike other types of money.
In other words, if crypto got sucked into a black hole, all bets are off, because physics get funky there. But aside from that, on Earth here, yes, yeah, it's rather unbreakable.
Not all crypto, but Bitcoin specifically, in a way, based on physics.
I get your metaphor.
Hopefully others will get the metaphor by the time we're done.
We'll check in on them. We'll do a survey. We're going to do a focus group, see how we affected.
Back to crypto. I'm going to play some clips. Todd and I are going to react.
Bah!
My favorite view of the value of Bitcoin on a long-term basis is to look at the size of the market it's going after. Mm-hmm. I think Bitcoin is well on its way to disrupting gold. That's a $20 trillion market. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be used for international transaction and cross-border transactions. That's another many trillion-dollar market. And then you can divide that by the number of Bitcoin and you end up with a target amount. At Bitwise, we think it's going to cross $1 million by 2029. Mm. I think from a shorter-term perspective, you can just look at supply and demand in the market, yeah. Right? The big criticism of Bitcoin is the price is set by supply and demand. But that's also a real benefit when you're in a market like today, where again, we're producing 160,000 Bitcoin a year and ETFs are buying 500,000.
Right.
Right. Something has to give. And I think what gives is price resistance and ultimately it goes higher.
Institutional money is flowing in, but it's just starting to flow in. Like he said, that's what's really pushed it up lately. Here in the next clip, we've got kind of more the actual data on that, like how much is being spent per day on Bitcoin, things of that nature. Todd?
Oh, yes, yes. So this is me like hearing these clips for the first time and everything. Bitcoin's up. Well, crypto in general is up a lot here recently, especially within the last week or so. You know, when we first started this show, whenever cryptocurrency came up, I was always skeptical. But with so many places and uses for it now, especially from legitimate agencies like governments and you know, transactions among governments and things like that, it's like, okay, that's something tangible. That's something that's real. Originally, we had old Grammy Graham on here. You know, that was one thing I was asking him about with Bitcoin because he had 100% faith in it. But it's like, okay, where's that faith coming from? Is it?
Let me tell you where it came from. Graham stumbled into Solana at $10 per. That's where it came from. And he rode that rocket straight up to like 220 a coin or whatever it went to at the time. That's where his faith comes from. Someone told him, buy Solana. Graham bought it.
Yeah.
He bought it cheap. It went 20x on his watch while he was holding it.
Right.
A fair amount.
That's definitely something that would leave an impression like that. Why didn't he just come out and say that then? Because he seemed a little squeamish at first. Like he was just trying to say that Bitcoin will be accepted the same way dollars are in vending machines.
I don't know. Here's the thing. Bitcoin solves a solution, which it's hard to manipulate. It's international, and no one government can control it. No one company can control it. And, you know, it runs like physics. And there are only 21 million of those. You sent me something about an asteroid this week. It has like 700 times the world supply of gold.
Exactly.
Like if someone could get to that.
Oh, we'd be all billionaires. But then again, if we're all billionaires, where's the incentive to be proactive?
Like,
Or
it would devalue gold.
Devalue gold. That's what I'm getting at. Like without that incentive, that scarcity, people aren't going to work.
But you can't find Bitcoin on an asteroid. It only exists where it exists, and there's only ever going to be 21 million of them. You know, people look at it like tulips or something. No, that's organic. That dies. You know, there was a tulip craze, and the price of tulips went way up. This is completely fucking different.
What the hell?
People have been saying that since Bitcoin was $10. Guess what, motherfucker? It's $120,000 per coin now.
Yeah, yeah.
Get with the fucking times.
Tulips? Tulips.
Look into it.
No. But I mean, like, I don't know. It seems like they could come up with it. You had a better metaphor. No,
people are still saying it. In comment sections, people are still saying it. I'm like,
these are flower lobbyists.
People, let it go.
Yeah.
And that just shows you how much adoption there isn't.
Well, it's something new. And anytime something new comes out, there should be like, you know, some sort of objectivity to it. So, but
also in the comments, yeah, I'd like to see anyone that's actually traded it for money. Okay, you can do it in 2 minutes. You can do it in 30 seconds.
That's kind of the way stock works. Yeah.
If you're on Coinbase and you have your balance of whichever crypto it is, you convert it to US dollars and you send it to your bank account instantly. It charges a fee instant. If you want to do an ACH 3-day transfer, they'll do it for free. If you want it instantly, and the fee's pretty small, boom, it's in your checking account. That's it. It's there.
I appreciate that. As an investor in Coinbase, I appreciate your transaction. Thank you.
Well, that helps keep Coinbase afloat, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, it's what we're here to do. I now refer to us as us, since, you know.
Have you looked at staking? Staking is like a CD that you don't have to renew. You stake a certain amount of your, whatever they allow you to stake, on Coinbase Solana. You can stake Solana.
Yeah.
You stake it. It's not a 3-month term. It's not a 6-month term. As long as you hold it, it's giving you 2% APR paid back in Solana. A little chip of it every few days. Yeah, every few days.
Okay.
If you want to unstake it, they'll tell you in plain English, it might take 5 to 15 days to unstake it, to kind of pull it out of the ecosystem.
Right, 2 weeks, basically.
So there, you can't cancel it instantly, but...
No, the 2%,
you don't have to,
the
you don't 2% have to
APR, you're not going to find a CD like that.
Well, you don't have to renew it like you do a CD.
Yeah.
Okay, crypto.com, it's not staking, but they have what is essentially equivalent to a CD with Bitcoin, 2.5%. That's the term on a 3-month hold. If you hold it, you can't access it for 3 months. They're going to give you 2.5% APR back in Bitcoin on crypto.com. Yeah. And they have a whole list. Crypto.com charges a little more fees than Coinbase.
I don't invest in them, by the way.
But
so they're a competitor.
If you look at their staking options and their what they call crypto earn, which is like their type, kind of like CD, because they're giving people loans on the stuff and things. They've created a banking ecosystem on it. And Jerome Powell, did you hear him say? Banks can do whatever they want to with Bitcoin. Nothing illegal there. If they want to build a financial product around it, go ahead. And that's what Crypto.com's doing. They're giving people loans, making them pay back 5%, but for you providing it, you're getting 2.5%.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a CD, because that you have to renew. You can do a 1-month term, but the interest is worse. It's 1.5% APR.
Does the Federal Reserve, if banks were to do business with each other and loans with crypto, the Federal Reserve has no oversight over crypto or no real interest as of right now in overseeing crypto?
I guess as of right now, although a lot of the things that have held crypto up, because I was looking at it back in 2011, okay, a lot of the shit that's held it up was government intervention.
Okay, so I mean, that's what gives it its credibility or its value.
That put the hardcore fucking brakes on it. They shut exchanges down. They said, no, this doesn't comply with the U.S., so, you know, Binance, you can't do business here until you build a Binance.us, which meets our standards.
I feel like that is such a U.S. thing to do, though. Universal healthcare? No. We don't do that here. We do this, which is a lot more complicated and a lot less serving. We don't do crypto like that here. No. We're just going to, shut it down and just deal with paper monopoly money.
What makes it worth something? That no one can control it. That's why the money's flowing in. What else makes it worth something? institutional investors, individual investors, big money is flowing in.
Yeah.
Do you think those people are going to let it fail now that they're on board? Do you think BlackRock's going to say, who cares? We dabbled with it, but it didn't really matter.
That's what I was originally asking about with Graham. I wanted more participation because I love the idea of it, but unless that idea is valued with something tangible like government intervention, like government money or whatever, like, it just seems like a Ponzi scheme.
Well, Trump gave it a big boost because he wants some strategic reserve of Bitcoin.
They say, like a million Bitcoin.
And you know, that's it's so new that everyone in Congress and stuff is like, I don't even know if we can do that. But I mean,
how can we waste money there? We don't know how it even makes money to waste it. Like, I'll be honest with you, as much money as Congress has thrown around in just in our lifetime alone, why not? Let's take a chance on it.
If you're buying Bitcoin today, it's still early. I don't think it's too late. So if you have zero exposure to Bitcoin and you feel like you missed it, 95% of investors have zero Bitcoin exposure. So you're still way ahead if you're buying Bitcoin today. If you look at Bitcoin wallets, comparing it to the internet, we're back to 1996 levels. Internet went exponential from 1996. So it's still the earliest days. I think Bitcoin is very useful because in the future, we're not going to be able to trust anything. There's nothing secure anymore. We can sample your voice. I mean, even someone takes our voice, translates into Korean using my voice, you'll never know what's true anymore. So you need to be able to trust a system. The blockchain, the Bitcoin blockchain is the most trusted blockchain. And that's why the United States wants to have a million Bitcoin. U.S. companies are buying Bitcoin. Banks will soon carry Bitcoin as collateral. But Ethereum is really important, too. Did any of you buy the Circle IPO or own Circle? Circle is a stablecoin, and they just went public 10 days ago at $31. It's now $242.
What is the ticker code?
CRCL.
CRCL.
Circle is a stablecoin. It's the second largest. Stablecoins are being pushed by the United States government. Here's the thing. Circle runs on Ethereum. Stablecoins run on Ethereum. So as stablecoins explode, Ethereum is the backbone for stablecoins. So I think Ethereum is going to make a big comeback as well. So I think those two are useful. And then Solana, I like, but it's not nearly as used as Ethereum.
How do you expect the asset to continue a price increase at these levels that we've seen? I mean, can it keep that up over the next 5 years, over the next 10 years? And at what point do we see, you know, winter coming again? Because that's been a permanent fixture of this asset class, right? It's gone from zero or 1,000 to 20 and then back down to 3 or 4 and then up to 50 and then back down to 15 and now up to 110. Like, when does it drop again?
Winter's not coming back. We're past that. We're past that phase. If Bitcoin's not going to zero, it's going to $1 million. And you have all the evidence you need to determine that, right? The President of the United States has determined he supports Bitcoin. The Cabinet supports Bitcoin. Scott Bessent supports Bitcoin. Paul Atkins has shown himself to be an enthusiastic believer of Bitcoin and digital assets. Ken Tez at CFTC feels the same, Ray. The banks are going to custody Bitcoin. Bitcoin has gotten through its riskiest period. The accounting has been corrected. There's now only 450 Bitcoin a day available for sale by natural sellers. That's the miners. At this level, that works out to about $50 million of Bitcoin available for sale every day. If that $50 million is bought, then the price has got to move up to find any seller that's price sensitive. Now, if you do the math, you'll actually see the Bitcoin treasury companies by themselves are buying the entire natural supply.
Yeah.
BlackRock and the ETFs are buying another measure of that. And we've got nation state actors coming into the space. So I think when Bitcoin rallies, if it surges to $500,000 or $1 million, then maybe we could talk about it crashing down by $200,000 a coin. But at the current price levels, it only takes $50 million to turn the entire drive shaft of the crypto economy one turn. And you've got the Trump media organization announcing $2.5 billion. You've got GameStop announcing $500 million. You've got my company that's raising billions and billions of dollars. So the writing is on the wall. Bitcoin's moving higher.
So that's Michael Saylor, MicroStrategy. He's like Bitcoin king at this point. But I mean, he really does push it. But he's giving you some of the data there. Miners, which Bitcoin mining is what processes the transactions.
Yeah.
450 new Bitcoin are being made every day.
And they're being all bought up, which is increasing the demand for the next 450.
Which is 50 million a day
that's
pouring in just to maintain the price.
Oh, yeah.
But the price has gone up because more than 50 million a day is pouring in.
Exactly.
This is what
gives me relief searching for the credibility behind this. This digital token. It's like, okay, my biggest hang up was like, okay, like a Ponzi scheme, it's only valuable if enough people believe it to be valuable that are using it and participating with it. Now that I feel like it's crossed that bridge more so than it ever has before, even with the first rise of it in the mid 2000s or early whatever.
Well, if you look at the chart, there was 1 year it had a 5,000% gain.
Yeah.
And there was 1 year that it had a 1,100% gain. Now, those were the biggest gains. That's probably not going to happen again in a year. Okay.
To me, that's early volatility. That's the exception, not the rule.
But the biggest downturn was a 72% on the year. So the up's been a lot bigger than the down.
Yeah.
But look at it this way. In 2010, there was a point in 2010 you could get a Bitcoin for $1. In 15 years, it's multiplied 120,000 times.
Yeah.
Okay, now...
About the same as the price of a three-bedroom, two-bath.
Give it 10 or 15 more years. It's not going to multiply that again, but you think it would 10 times? I do. I think it's going to hit a million. And a lot of projections are around 2030. I think it might take longer, but it's going to happen. So what if it takes 10 years instead of 5? Now, if it takes 5, here's a weird statistic. You're not too late to invest in Bitcoin. You are early. 95% of people still don't have the shit. But if you started up with 100 a day, you would need 1,200 days to go by where the price froze to ever have a whole coin. It's about 4 years.
Yeah.
The price ain't going to freeze for 4 years. If you bought $100 of Bitcoin every single day, even on the weekends, you'll never have a whole coin. If you bought 200 a day, it's probably going to outpace you. I think somewhere around the $250 mark, if you started right now, you would probably eventually have a whole coin if you could allocate $250 every single day. That's crazy.
You know, it just in short, just to sum it up, might even help you in post here. But I look at Bitcoin and other popular cryptos today with the right people and definitely the right money behind it as a reliable investment long-term as the way I view Amazon or Microsoft or, you know, one of those companies that are just stable, that are just like, you know, they're not going anywhere anytime soon. If anything, they're only going to get bigger. And that's the way it seems like, especially with Bitcoin and other, you know, Ethereum and others tied to it. It's like...
Hey,
the water's rising.
Yeah, and there's a chance it all crashes down to the ground. But we've reached a point where there's a greater chance that it goes higher than the chance of it crashing to the ground. So, I mean, you're looking at a 95% chance that it keeps running.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could crash to zero. But a lot of weird stuff would have to come into play for that to happen. So it's starting to be pretty unlikely.
Oh, I think...
It's a gold standard.
Well,
when we didn't necessarily ask to be put back on one, but everybody knew we needed to be.
Well, it as long as it has the tangibility behind it, it in itself I wouldn't label as gold because it's just a digital asset. It's got to have the participation of people and everyday people.
Here's some common like naysayer type stuff.
Yeah.
Well, what if electricity goes out?
Okay,
well, you don't have access to your normal money when that happens. When Helene came through and the power grid went down, it was starting to be chaos fast.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's not even related to it, though, because it's not like the coin is going anywhere.
No, but this is just a common, like,
yeah, yeah. Okay, naysayer. In your backyard, yeah, the electricity goes out. All Bitcoin doesn't exist. Like, you're talking about a worldwide blackout? Okay, Mr. Man in Black.
And so do payment processing systems at the grocery store and a whole lot of other stuff.
Exactly. Yesterday, we just had the power out for an hour. Did you lose your money?
I did not.
Oh, okay. Well, because we couldn't ring anybody up. I didn't know.
Here's another thing they say. What if quantum computing hacks it? Well, the common response to that, a very valid and true response, is Bitcoin is so hard to hack to get enough hash rate to overcome that blockchain that they've got going. You could hack every bank in the world before you could ever hack Bitcoin. So what's really the point of that argument? Everything else goes down and all the other finances go down first. So it's like it's the last man standing regardless.
Well,
so it's
if all that wasn't relevant, it's like, hey, if I, go out, I have a night on the town, I could get mugged. Well, yeah. Odds are you won't. You'll take normal precautions. But it's like, the same thing like getting hacked or your ID stolen.
Well, if you want to hack the hospital system's medical records, it's a shitload easier to hack than Bitcoin.
Yeah.
There is no office that you sneak a thumb drive into or something like that. It ain't like that.
There is no Bitcoin headquarters. I feel like fear like that is bottomless because, okay, what will make you feel safe at night? What's unhackable to you? Like, come on. The way I see things like that is there's a certain standard of security, which basically means it has a target for somebody trying to get past it.
People that don't know what quantum computing is still throw that out there. Well, quantum computing is going to hack it. Okay, it's still the last man standing. That nullifies your argument. Moving on. Dave Portney, ladies and gentlemen, of Barstool Sports.
And balls.
Listen. Sometimes we do these stock shows, and I literally, sent my stock guy, my finance guy. It's like, we talk every day about stocks. We should just shut up and bought Bitcoin. Just shut up and bought Bitcoin, forget everything else, and bank. I mean, it is rip, roaring, ripping. Bitcoin ripping. ETH is up 100% in 3 months. XRP is ripping. You name it, it's rip, rip, rip. If you're going to trade crypto, you might as well do it because it's just rip city. It may delay. It may stick. It was around, you couldn't get over 100,000. Now it's at 120. It's just a rip show. I have all my crypto on Kraken. I should have more. I have over 5 million. I should have more.
Is it ripping up?
It's ripping the shit out of it, man. That about wraps it up with the ripping, I think.
It's a rip-roaring rocket rip.
I stand corrected.
Closing remarks.
Final thoughts.
People say, don't store your crypto on an exchange. Make sure you have offline storage in a cold wallet. Okay, that's like a little digital device holds your stuff. What if that device quits working?
Well, you heard about the guy trying to buy a landfill because he had 60,000 Bitcoin on his hard drive that he accidentally threw away.
Well, we had what if your house floods? What if it burns down and burns that up? But we had a soundboard not plugged in or nothing, just sitting on the table, go out recently. It was our backup, but we wound up needing the backup and it's dead. I mean, a capacitor or something's out in it, but it's like, is it really that safe to be in a cold wallet? I don't know. You could just spread it amongst six exchanges. I get it if you have $1 billion of Bitcoin, but if you have 10,000 in crypto, maybe just spread it across 5 exchanges. Just a personal concept. Do what you want to do. Do what you feel safe.
I think you should take the growth of it out and keep the principal. you know, because that's only going to get more valuable. But if you take the growth out, you're taking that value and you're distributing it somewhere else, hopefully putting it to something else with more value. That's making your money work for you. It as long as Bitcoin and whatever you're invested in, crypto or not, is doing well, you're doing well. But you got to keep that hustle up with money. You know, the more you make money moves, the more money you're going to have when you do move, or, you know, whatever you want to do with it. But yeah, it's like take the value, take the growth of that out, leave the principal, and do something with the growth. You could reinvest it if it's still a hot item, but I mean, diversify.
Earlier I was talking about staking and basically a CD with crypto.
Right.
Can't do that when it's in cold storage.
No. And I understand to a degree, like keeping some in reserve. Like it's kind of like a savings account maybe. Like I'm not making much interest, but if I have a, like you said, if something happens to the house or something and I need some quick cash and a lot of it to repair something or maintain something, yeah, okay, it's good to have that cold wallet, you know?
No, I was saying if something happens to the house and destroys the cold wallet that's stored in the
house. Okay, well, that too. Yeah, hopefully, you know,
there's risk either way you look at it.
I'd like to think you'd put it in a safe maybe or somewhere safe, you know. I wouldn't leave it on a dresser. Seriously, though, did you hear about that guy trying to buy the landfill?
I've heard about that for a while. If you've got 60-foot, and who's to say that the hard drive's usable once you find
true.
It? It might be rusted to bits. Yeah. It might be crushed in half.
I mean, I don't know what
it's
kind
had
of...
bulldozers running over it.
I don't know what kind of team could forensically piece it back together, but I would definitely try if I had 60,000 Bitcoin, each worth over 120 grand.
If you got a cold storage wallet, maybe put it in a bunker like that when they tried to bomb.
You know, and...
Where the hell was that? Israel bombed who?
Oh, it's...
Why is it drift? You know the thing. Iran.
Yeah.
Keep it in one of those, in a Ziploc bag, of course.
Yeah.
And it'll be safe.
Maybe with some rice just in case it gets moist. But yeah, I look at Bitcoin the same way as I view Amazon, you know, Disney, Coca-Cola. It's becoming more and more, especially this year more than ever, of less drastic volatility and more reliable trajectory. And I like that.
It's less some nerd in his mom's basement that thinks it's cool and more institutional now. And the money's really flowing.
The
in.
Nerd has moved up to the living room. We're out of the basement now. You know, we're getting a little legitimate now. A little bit more respect.
They're you probably know, still I living feel, there, though.
I feel like those people, I'll be honest with you, I think the majority of people on the crypto wave, especially at the beginning of it, they want to keep riding that wave to get the most, and they might, but it's like, I just don't see them like doing what I was saying. Like
a lot of people jumped off, and I had to myself because my income wasn't enough.
Yeah.
On what they were talking about, the crypto winter.
Yeah.
That was a long-ass downturn. I mean, it basically trended down for 3.5 years. Now, you could look at the annual data of the date where they're like, how much did it do this year? No, throughout the year, it dropped for a long time, and it whittled me down to nothing, and I was building my place.
Yeah.
I had to cash out a substantial amount, but what was left to finish my house.
Right.
And that's cool. At least I have my house. That was my logic then. It was the right move then. I didn't have enough to throw back into it as it took back off. And that's okay, though. You're still early. I think... we're still early. It's starting to lift, but it's actually really in its infancy, even still.
My bet is by the time we get to retirement age, that 55, 60-year-old, it's gonna hit in our lifetime the trajectory, the realm of what it's going to hit in our lifetime, and that would be a good time to cash out because I doubt we'll have Social Security, at least at that age, to our disposal. So it would, you know, investments like that, that are, you know, in their quote unquote infancy. That's what I'm going to rely on.
My final closing thought. A lot of people look at Bitcoin like they look at Dogecoin. It's like, hey, let's throw some money here, see what happens. Maybe it goes up. You think governments would do that? No, and that's not what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're not just throwing it at Bitcoin to see what happens. It's completely different than Dogecoin. It's completely different than XRP. XRP has a company running that. If they had an insider that was embezzling, stealing, that could be a real problem.
Cooking the books. It would literally be a Ponzi scheme at that point.
Bitcoin doesn't have that. That's why okay, it may not do 100% gainer in a day or a 30% gainer in a day, but as the tide comes in, the waves are going to crash and recede. It's eventually going to be a tsunami. The tsunami hasn't hit yet. It seems like it has because 120K is crazy, but I don't think the tsunami has hit yet. So you're not too late.
Yeah.
And allocate some to it. Yeah. Don't go 100% in or 50% in. They say do 1 or 2%. I think that'd be fair.
Well, you look at it like any other investment. When I say I look at it like Amazon and Microsoft, I'm not 50% into them either. I just look at them as like a savings account for my, you know, golden years, because I feel like they're reliable enough and their return is more than any other savings account to where that money's okay. It will only grow.
Now, my final closing thought, just so people understand, Bitcoin is not going to be used for digital transactions except the kind of one-off. We do want to send $1 billion at a time. You can do that. But as far as like checking out at the grocery store and all, it is way too slow. It was antiquated, but the security features and the anonymity of it make it super valuable. It never will be able to achieve the speeds needed for everyday transactions. Won't happen. That's where some of the others come in. Ripple, XLM. I like Ripple. Here's why I like Ripple. It's already been through like 3 rounds of lawsuits from the SEC because they're trying to determine what it is, how it can legally be used. They're trying to build that framework around it because it's super fast. It can be used to replace credit card transactions. It's instant. I mean, there's microseconds involved.
No. Wait. Okay. Like, this is one of these things where, like, we got the technology for it, but how will it be institutionalized? Like, basically, for it to be used widely, credit card companies have to adopt it. So what's their angle there?
Here's the angle. XRP's in bed with those companies a whole lot deeper than anyone else.
Yeah.
They're a little bit ahead of the game. They got a big company behind it that's doing their best to get that piece of the pie. And they're doing a pretty good job so far.
If they ever partner with a credit card company, I'm definitely throwing my money at them, because that would be what it takes just having the technology for everyday transactions. That's a great thought on paper. It's only hypothetical though until practice, and credit card companies aren't going to let you infringe on their industry like that. They're too powerful too. So you have to form a partnership to even get your foot in the door.
You have to rub their back too. You have to feed them too.
Way of the world. Everyone's got to have some skin in the game if you want to compete. So, you know.
Well, look into it if you want to.
Yeah.
But something like that could actually, even if it's on the back end, you're actually transacting in U.S. dollars. But, you know, Ripple has a back end system where the companies are settling.
Yeah.
In XRP. You don't really know it. You're just using your credit card. That saves them a little bit of money because it's cheaper than using Swift.
Yeah.
Now, Swift may say, hold on, we got a way to be cheaper since we're about to lose what we've got and we don't want shaken out of our position. But
they're probably doing what they can to gain
leverage.
But
a lot of people still think Bitcoin, that's their hold up. They're like, I can't go and spend that at the gas station. You know what? You probably never will be able to. You could find a Bitcoin ATM and cash out some money and give it to the person. Hey, $20 on pump through. That's super sluggish. To verify transactions on the Bitcoin blockchain, if you don't put some money with it to make yourself appealing to the miners, because these miners are kind of smart. They're out there searching, looking. Your transactions last. One of those deals you're talking about with like 60,000 Bitcoin, there was someone in Asia that had that. They were early. They had mined for a few days on their computer. They had like 700 Bitcoin. Once it took off, they're like, hey, we need to cash this out. But the program that they had used that stored it was so old, there was no way to put any incentive on top of it. So to move it from their wallet to an exchange wallet, there was no reward for the miner. And They tried. It wouldn't confirm. It wouldn't go. I mean, there wasn't 20 cents to be had. There was no incentive for this any of the mining process to move that transaction.
Yeah.
It was like the Chinese New Year or something. It finally went through. You can read about this, and the guys were like, holy, you know what? It went through. They got their alert or whatever because the traffic got so slow at that time, which now would never happen. Traffic's never going to get that slow, but the network traffic got so slow that there was nothing else for the miners to mine, and they were switched on mining, so they did that because that was a task for them to do, and they did it. But if you put a big fee with it behind it, it will push it through a little bit quicker. Most of the exchanges kind of bake that in. Part of their fee structure that you're paying them is so that when you do send it from exchange to exchange, you know, one wallet to the next, they're going to put a little bit of gas in that tank to get it through. They may show you what it is. Hey, we're charging $5 as a fee. Or it may be there's no fee, but they've kind of already accounted for that in previous fees.
That's the only thing that there's not too many things I see holding up Bitcoin as long as it's got real something tangible behind it, like a government.
It's just
real cash. But like that's the only holdup. That's the only shortcoming I see.
It's not. You're getting caught up in what everyone else does. Bitcoin is just digital gold. That's it. It's the security of it.
Yeah.
It's the decentralized nature of it. But something like Ripple is more like what people think Bitcoin would be. Maybe that could be the currency.
Maybe it should be then. Because like that's the thing. It's got to be simple as or simpler than currency for it to be truly embraced on that worldwide level. Credit card companies have just made it that simple. And like I said, they're not going to just hand over their industry to the new guy. So the new guy is going to have to, I don't know.
They're not going to hand it over. If Mark Fogle stood in front of them and said, "We're going to kick you in the nuts,"
they'll kill him.
They'll kill Mark Fogle?
They'll kill anybody they need to. They have too much money just to take a threat like that.
Okay, regardless, shout out Mark Fogle.
Yeah, yeah, and shout out to the hitman going after Mark Fogle. Hey, do what you got to do, bro. We're just all trying to make a living.
You got any other shout outs?
Honestly, no. I didn't expect that one either. That just was spontaneous. But yeah, If they can make Bitcoin transactions quick and simple and easy, sky's the limit. It really is. It's just that's I think the everyday man's hang up.
I could keep going. They were wanting to do a Lightning network, which was going to process transactions off of the Bitcoin blockchain and then later come back and update the blockchain. So transactions will go fast on the Lightning network,
mm-hmm.
and then it will like overnight slowly update the ledger. The way it has to, and we'll have a standardized Lightning network, meaning that's the one everybody uses, and there's your solution. But that's old news, and what
abandoned that idea?
I don't know, and I'm sure there's someone still working on it, hoping that they can be the one that solves it. Because I mean, if you do, and you
a company fucking does that, I'm throwing my money at them.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big thing. They were trying to develop a Lightning network forever, and that was the concept.
Yeah.
We won't update real time, but we'll have a standardized way of updating that everybody kind of agrees on, and it'll update when it gets a chance.
You know, these are details people need to know before they invest in stuff in companies. Like, just because it's cheap and involved in crypto doesn't mean it's going to be a winner. But, like, if they can add some sort of innovation and to make it more customary for everyday use, casual use, especially if it's somehow easier than a credit card or a debit card to use and transactions are quicker, again, sky's the limit. That's the company I want as a middleman for an industry that's just now taken off, it seems.